Hello, and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into their work. I'm your host, Matt Kuhlman, and my guest this episode is Russell Nachman. Russell earned his BFA from Colorado State University in 1990, and his MFA from the San Francisco Art Institute in 1996. In recent years, Russell's focus has been on creating pieces that incorporate black metal figures into compositions that directly reference ancient Christian documents. While the work uses a very confrontational mix of imagery, his interest lies more in creating images that contemplate the state of Western civilization. His previous works were created with similar interests, but included more personal narrative of watching utopian ideals of the 60s and 70s disappear as he grew up. Join me as I talk with Russell about his work and how the imagery he uses exemplifies his ideas. Hi, Russell. How are you doing?
Good. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you here today. So we're at your apartment / studio here in Williamsburg. We got a lot of your current pieces around. These are the pieces that I was looking at mostly. When I was researching your work, and I do just want to explain a little bit about what you're doing with them. It's a lot of, like, kind of black metal figures. These are all, like, found papers and things that you're doing these on, aren't they?
No, this is actually a purchased paper. Most of it's done on this gray paper made by this company called Twin Rocker in Indianapolis, I believe. And it's just fantastic paper, but I age it and beat the crap out of it because I want them to look like found documents. Mm-hmm. I'm not interested in them looking pristine and perfect. I want them to look like they've been sitting in a trunk in someone's basement for 100 years.
Yeah, so. You fooled me. And so what kind of images and scenes are you trying to portray? What are you trying to present with the viewer in these pieces, having them look like aged?
Well, the idea, because, you know, I want them to feel like quasi-religious documents. Mm-hmm. I've always loved religious painting and iconic painting, especially in its use of symbolism and its kind of gravity. Mm-hmm. And so these are supposed to feel like documents of a metaphysical nature, and basically it's kind of like something that's been lost, that's kind of the format of it. Mm-hmm. The black metal guys are basically evolved out of a desire to I wanted to paint things that are driven by a depiction of, like, an emotional state and ideas and thoughtful state. And usually, like, in, like, throughout art history, I've always loved the idea of people using the clown, the harlequin, the everyman. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, I'm going to use black metal guys because they're great contemporary clowns, And there's, I'm definitely riffing on that whole culture. Mm-hmm. So
What's your relation to black metal? I saw that you were in a band, is that right?
Yeah, that really doesn't have any... My relation to black metal is just... I came across to some friends, playing some stuff, and I've always had an attraction to just bizarre, fucked up music.
Yeah.
I'm not... I like metal, but I'm not, like, a metalhead. I like all different types of music, and there's just something about the a lot of the crazy black metal that just it's absurd, but it really it tweaks me. I don't know.
Yeah, I've searched through YouTube and just like looked for black metal videos and spent a couple hours just to be like, man, somebody put a lot of thought into this like really weird video.
And part of it is that because a lot of these guys take themselves so seriously that it invites humor.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely part of it with the choice of the black metals.
Mm-hmm. From my understanding of black metal, a lot of it's supposed to be just like in your face Satanism, and are you kind of just poking fun at that also, or are you wanting kind of a religious document?
I'm not really. I wouldn't say I was poking fun at it. I'm just kind of I'm not really making any kind of critique on it.
Okay.
I think of it just as like a device, something to use. I'm definitely not critiquing or endorsing the music or the culture or whatever. I'm just using because I find it interesting. Mm-hmm. And I find, because they take themselves so seriously, that to have this group of just kind of drunken buffoons, you know, it adds an aspect to it. And of course their religious thing, which most of the black metal guys would say they're pagans, and then that Satan stuff would follow.
Yeah.
But the other aspect of using them that I like is, you know, is to have these documents that look like, you know, proto-Christian documents, but to have these kind of heathens with, you know, skull tattoos and upside down crosses, more as naives, as naifs, rather, not necessarily as anti.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the idea of, like, you know, the destruction of Western metaphysics, and you know, these are the guys that are just kind of like the cavemen 50,000 years ago, that are just kind of picking up debris and just trying to find meaning again. You know, like, tree falls over, lightning strikes, you know, Ed says, hey, that means something. So it's kind of that.
Did you catch that?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, an emotional state of that kind of empty euphoria, you know, just like where everything is potent because nothing has meaning, you know.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was just wondering, because you're using, like, such loaded imagery, like you were saying, being religious and stuff, so...
Oh, absolutely, yeah. No, I know that it's very specific and loaded. I'm hoping that it transgresses that, so...
And how long have you been working on this series now? This about a dozen pieces or so right here.
This series is about little over 4 years old, 5 years old.
Okay.
It was a transition. Prior to that, I was doing more like empty landscapes that were more autobiographical, kind of charting the idea of, you know, the lost utopia of the 70s, you know, when I was a kid growing up there in detritus. And a couple of friends of mine were always noticing that I'd be painting these very kind of melancholic hippie, you know, passive landscapes, and I'd be just listening to the most vile, aggressive music, and they're like, well, why don't you do, you know, black metal paintings? And I'm like, well, I don't want to just do black metal paintings, I want to find a reason.
Yeah.
And eventually, you know, this idea, you know, the post-mortem of, you know, Western utopic decay, like, you know, well, what happens after that, you know.
What exactly was your background like growing up and stuff? Did you say you were in Detroit? Is that right?
No, yeah. Colorado.
Okay.
I grew up in idyllic little town, Boulder, Colorado. My parents, in college, you know, I euphemistically call them hippies, but they really weren't. They just, you know, I mean, my mom was just basically a left-wing college, you know, liberal, and Boulder was just this kind of haven of, you know, guys in cut-off shorts and Big Freak Brothers hairdos and vans, you know, selling weed to my teenage, you know, babysitter, and it was a very kind of utopic environment, you know, post-60s utopic environment to grow up in, but you could just smell the ennui and despair of, you know, you know, and the creeping decadence that was going on during the 70s. So,
At what point did you leave Boulder?
I left to go to school. I went to undergraduate at Colorado State University in Fort Collins, and then as soon as I graduated, I packed up my shit and went out to LA. And then went to grad school in San Francisco, and then moved out here. So,
what brought you all the way across the country to New York? Just New York itself, or
it was basically for the art world. Mm-hmm. I mean, I San Francisco is a great town, and it's a fantastic place to be, but it's very provincial, the art world there, and, you know, it's very hard to break to be a practicing artist in San Francisco and get, you know,
get out of the
national attention, let alone international attention. So mm-hmm. it was either move back to L.A. or move to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Been to L.A., done that.
Yeah.
Want to try something new. Cool. And I've been here since 99, and it's home now.
Mm-hmm. And what specifically was your degree in? Because you have, like, really highly rendered, like, images. It's kind of what I see out of, like, an illustrative.
Yeah. Level. Well, I basically grew up drawing. Like, mm-hmm. Since I could hold a pencil, and I grew up drawing cartoons and science fiction stuff and comic books, you know, that was my main focus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then hormones and adolescence came on, and, you know, back in the early 80s, drawing comics and stuff like that was still kind of geek fodder. Like, yeah. Shit, how the hell am I? You know. So I got into applied, like, I got into this idea of, you know, going into graphic design. And when I got to college, that's when I discovered, you know, fine art and took art history classes and art classes and switched my major to fine arts, and I was mm-hmm. painting. And then grad school, it was kind of, I just sampled the, you know, the Whitman's candy sampler. I was doing installation, I was doing sound work, I was doing sculpture painting, you know, just testing it all, and, mm-hmm. you know. Enamored of, you know, like it was the 90s, I was really, really fucking into Bruce Nauman and shit like that. And then I moved out here and I kind of reached a plateau with that and really evaluated, like, what I think is important in art and what I think someone can do. And I decided, well, you have to bring some of your own perspective and your own voice because, mm-hmm. you know, everything's been done, there's just new people doing it. And I decided, well, I got to go back to drawing and painting
mm-hmm.
and find out how to make my way that way because that's something unique to me that I can add.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
and that led me back to a very illustrational way, mm-hmm. which was my, like, you know, I was also reacting to the very academic, you know, where I, you know, like 100 years ago, it was, you know, people shaking their fists at marble and oil paint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the Academy is, you know, installation and sound art and, you know, and people running around naked and doing, you know, it's like the gate is open to all that. Now that is the Academy.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, well, if I want to, you know, fuck people up and turn some heads, I'm going to go back and do just very illustrational looking work and just dare people to say that's not art because we just mm-hmm. spent 100 years.
Yeah.
Challenging anyone who says that's not art, so is my little.
Do you encounter people that challenge its validity as art? Or?
Well, not so directly, but yeah. You know how it is, you know.
Talking junk, like, on the internet and stuff.
Yeah, I do. Well, God, I avoid that like yeah. the plague. But you know, I mean, it's a hard sell. A lot of people look at it and they, you know, they say, I don't know. You know, whereas the guy next to me has just taped a bottle of Jack Daniels to the wall and lit a fire beneath it and fucking clapping. And, oh my God, that's brilliant! You know?
Yeah, I think you definitely have a unique style for your work, but it is in, like, kind of a vein that exists among other people. Yeah. Do you actively look at, like, work in this kind of genre and play off of it, or?
Honestly, I look at work that's hundreds of years old.
Okay.
You know, I mean, a lot of these are directly referencing like Caravaggio paintings and, you know, religious I like a lot of this current series I'm doing that's going up in a show is supposed to look like it's come out of the little prayer books.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is, you know, sound, but like these little prayer books. That was a show at the Morgan Library of these illustrated manuscripts, and it just blew my mind.
Yeah,
And just the idea of an illustrated manuscript, the idea of iconic, symbolic painting.
Mm-hmm. Like pre-printing press, they had
to Yeah, everything's hand-drawn, everything has significance, the rabbit under the tree means something, you know, the guy on the path towards the rabbit under the tree, you know, so it's that language that I love, it's that, you know, what I reference, but honestly, I would love to see some contemporary people doing very illustrational work that I get turned on to because I don't find it. You know? I have underground comics people that I love, and so people like Rick Griffin and, you know, that I adore, but as far as I quote fine art, it's very hard for me. So
yeah.
Where Walton Ford, I think, could come. I like his watercolors.
Mm. Where do you find the audience comes from mostly for this? Because I thought it was funny you said you
European.
Had spent time in L.A., and it seems like a very West Coast aesthetic to me, almost. Or
well, I'm kind of a Western kid, but I like it on the East Coast. West Coast, they, you know, L.A., people dig it in L.A. It's the like biggest audience I have is... Netherlands and Denmark right now. They eat the stuff up.
They love black metal over there too, right?
Yeah, and I think they like the infusion of Americana here. Especially like in Copenhagen, Denmark, there's a rooted art culture, collector culture there that is really into quote American bad boy kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a lot of my good friends and colleagues are doing well over there, and they're, you know, they do very much the kind of bad boy motorcycle type art. And I think I usually get lumped in, I think probably more by my friendship and association with them than actual content. But, you know, I mean, I've got their tattoo imagery, and there's a lot of my friends do a lot of tattoo, you know, sort of things. So,
Are you planning to continue on with this series for a while?
It's really making me happy. I don't see any departure. The world just continues to grow. So, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it's going to go on for a while. Mostly just because I get such a kick out of doing it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, and I'm. To me, one of the most satisfying things is capturing a facial expression and getting it just right.
Yeah, they are very animated, all these people. They're not...
It's like kabuki, you know, that's the other thing that I like about the mask, is you focus on the facial expression. You're not like, well, who's that? You know? And I do, you like a lot of models, like that guy right there is Iggy Pop, you know, it's not important that it's Iggy Pop, but I used him as a reference because he can look like such a loon so often. I just love it. I love it, and I love his facial structure.
He's got that knobby kind of face.
Yeah. I mean, he'd be an awesome, like, you know, kabuki actor or something with his, just the way his face moves. So,
yeah, have you thought about incorporating other kind of cultural plays on the same kind of clown or aspect?
I think about that. When something strikes me as necessary for me to do, I'll probably do it. But I have to feel like there has to be some sort of impetus to do it, you know, not, you know, because like my work always evolves out of the kind of growth and, you know, like references and emphasis change.
I guess you didn't mention specifically like Western culture, so if you...
It's definitely, this is definitely, like, I'm definitely really into this idea of the sunset of the West, which is where I think we are right now. We're right smack dab at, you know, at twilight.
Yeah.
You know, the world is changing, energies are shifting, things are going different places, and, you know, we've had our time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, that's like I want this to not, I want my work to be just kind of, you know, like a statement of like, well, it's the end of the weekend, you know, it's like, I'm not lamenting, I'm not, you know, I'm not like prescribing. I think one of the hardest things that I have, you mentioned earlier, to deal with, that I think a lot of artists and writers and musicians deal with is especially in the U.S., is people like almost instinctively think you have a moral or a message or a politic.
Yeah.
You know, whereas I don't. I have an expression. I have something that I'm expressing and I'm exhibiting, like, you know, like someone who paints an apple just because they thought it looked awesome.
Yeah.
You know, this is an expression, and you know, I have ideas, but I'm not prescriptive. You know, mm-hmm. I'm not saying this is better or worse, or you should do this, or isn't it? Doesn't it suck that this is going away, or that isn't it great that it is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I don't think, you know, especially as you get older, the world just doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So.
Because even if you have an opinion, things are still going to change no matter what.
Yeah.
You just got to recognize it.
Once you've been on the planet for a while and you've thought about a lot of things and talked to a lot of people, you realize that your opinions and your mind, you can, you know, if you're thoughtful, they will change.
Mm-hmm.
And you will see things from another direction. Mm-hmm. And there is no, as much as everybody would like, there is no black and white definitive answer. And that, I think that's part of what intrigues me, aside with my my heritage. My father, my parents got divorced early. My father's a born-again Christian, so I definitely have a hostile background with Christianity, let's say. But mm-hmm. Actually don't think I'm being hostile in this work towards it. I'm actually kind of embracing the idea of belief
mm-hmm.
without having it anymore. So it's kind of like a longing for this, the, you know, this, you know, God, remember when just there was just belief, you know, that was enough. And now it's like it's gone. It's kind of like you can't just put it back together and just start believing in something again. That seems rather asinine and arbitrary.
You can't force yourself to believe in something. You have to actually wholeheartedly just buy into it. Or it, once you question it, you're not believing anymore.
Exactly. So, I don't know. I kind of went tangential on that one, but I'm not sure where to wrap it back in. But
that's what this is all about, is going
cool.
Exploring tangents. I did want to talk some about your work previous to this that I saw, where you said it was more personal narrative, and
mm-hmm.
there was some interesting scenes in there. Look, it did reference strongly that kind of like 70s era, like, and it looked kind of like 70s album cover designs or something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But what were some of the elements that you were putting in these pieces? There was some kind of like, there was sometimes like piles of junk, like I remember there was a that orange 76 sign was down the corner, and that's very emblematic of like Midwestern, like
sticker cultures. And when you're a kid, you're throwing stickers on everything.
Yeah.
that work was very specific to the idea of kind of the junk heap of lost dreams.
Mm.
And, you know, and it being very autobiographical, I just remember growing up in a suburban neighborhood right up against, it was called Wonderland Hills,
mm-hmm.
you know, right up against the mountains, and there's all these fields and lakes and areas behind the suburbs of partially developed areas, and areas where, you know, I think anybody who has lived in a semi-rural area knows this place. There's the place by the ditch or the creek with a tuft of trees where someone has, like,
just like
gotten rid of a couch, and then people just like it becomes like this little hangout spot,
mm-hmm.
where it's a combination of people's garbage and throwaways. Then there's like the teenagers, and that's where they stash the porno mags and the empty bottles of you know, cheap wine and booze, and the fire pit, and you know, the joints, and it's this great to me, those were these great little, you know, enclaves of, you know, lost innocence, lost, you know, desires, and lost utopia. And that, I used that scenario as a metaphor of, like, this trash heap of, you know, where you have, like, Carlos Castaneda books, and the motorcycle from Easy Rider, and, even more esoteric things like, The One-Dimensional Man by Marcuse, you know, all this, like, seminal 60s kind of thought, you know, just, now it's just in the back, and we just go back there every once in a while, leaf through it, and get stoned, and remember the good old days.
Yeah.
So, and the album cover thing fit very, you know, because I grew up, like, in an age of still, you got albums, and you put the double album out, and you put on, like, Yes, and you draw, and, you know, get really into things, and so, yeah, it was extremely sentimental work, so.
And you kind of mentioned, like, graphic novel work earlier. Have you ever thought about trying to weave together kind of a narrative? I guess that line of work has already passed, but out of your current work with the...
I have. I'm a lousy storyteller. I can't... What I'd want to do, you know, which I think I'm doing with the work and not such a direct fashion, is one of my favorite and probably the most influential comic book thing that I grew up with was the 1970s heavy metal magazines, and mostly the work that was being imported from France, like Mobius and Bial and a couple of these other guys, Drouet. But like Mobius, this guy, French comic book artist named Mobius, did this kind of stream of consciousness piece that ran over like 2.5 years called The Airtight Garage. And it blew my mind because it was like, you know, metaphysics and pyramid floating and Star Wars and science fiction. And he just, you know, and you know, his process was just like every day, like, oh, they want another couple of pages, I'll just keep the story going. So it had this kind of aspect of a kind of like serial, like the 30s serials, but it was very metaphysical and it was just one of those things that it had no linear track to it, but it made sense. And I love that. And I love that sensation of being in a narrative that is disjunctive and takes jags and doesn't make any sense, but it feels like a whole. It's like, yeah, this is awesome. I like mystery more than certainty.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Cool. Well, I'm about out of questions for you. Cool. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we go? Or? No.
But thank you so much. Thanks for wanting to listen to me.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
And that concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Russell Nachman. You can find his work online at russellnachman.blogspot.com. You can also learn more about me at my website, mattkuhlman.com. If you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to studiosessionspodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee that I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit bigredandshiny.com for future episodes, along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.